Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Remember last year's Ice Bucket Challenge? Lots of money raised for ALS research. How much was raised and where did it go? We'll talk about it. But first, consider this. An online video was widely distributed showing Ferguson's Michael Brown beating up an old man. But it was not Michael Brown. It was widely circulated online that a woman sitting next to Michelle Obama at the State of the Union was a plant put there for political purposes. That was false. There are numerous cases of false information being distributed on the Internet, via email and social media, widely accepted as true. How do we develop media literacy, the critical thinking skills to challenge what we see and hear in this digital age? We're talking about that today with Webster University Professor Art Silverblatt, a vice president of Gateway Media Literacy Partners of St. Louis. Larry Morris is a media communications graduate student at Webster University. A little later, we'll chat with Eugene Kiley of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan site that monitors what politicians say and advertising. Art and Larry, thank you so much for being with us in studio. Good to see you, Don. Thank you for having us. Art, I'll start with you. You know, we have, as you well know, access to enormous amounts of information today. A lot of it, as I've indicated, is bogus. How big a problem is this?
Well, it's an enormous problem. People are, media reflects attitudes, it shapes attitudes, it reinforces attitudes. We spend much more time with media than we do with our friends and family. I saw a horrifying study showing that television, which is now the second most used medium, is on in the average American home for, over 4 hours a day. People are engaged in what they call interpersonal familial conversation for about 4 minutes a day. Hmm. And I suspect it's mostly conversations about media, who's got the remote, that kind of stuff. I mean, so we develop so many attitudes where we learn so much through the media. That it becomes important that we have the critical skills to distinguish between fact and fiction.
In this digital age, Larry, social media plays a huge role, and I know this is something you're familiar with and are studying. How do you see this this problem, this enormous problem, as Art puts it, vis-a-vis social media?
It's just a matter of adapting to a new generation of children who are utilizing it. I always make it clear that I'm on the cusp individual. Internet kind of took off when I was in middle school. So the old methods of researching and studying, we were taught. And so when I look at something online, working with kids, I'll know to look at it, do some research, get some background information. While my kids would just read about the study, was like 15 seconds of it. And that's if they agree with it and it fits with their opinion, they'll just run with it. And we have to figure out a way to get this newer generation to research what they're reading.
Art, that is a big part of the problem. People who are willing to accept the things with which and to which they agree.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting first of all, kids at the age of two are using social media, and they're very comfortable, more comfortable with it than older citizens. That's pretty stunning. But also, when you get new equipment, it comes with instructional materials. People don't read that. Younger people do not read the instruction booklets. They intuit it. Or they come at it from other means, but they will not use the traditional sort of go through the book to determine what the capacity of a particular gizmo happens to be.
It seems to me that a lot of them don't have to because they instinctively, intuitively know how to use this stuff.
Yeah. And, the people who are designing this, keep that in mind. I mean, they want to do it in an intuitive fashion. And I think that's one of the things about Apple products is that they always had it, the experience of the consumer in mind so that there was a logic to what was going on. That wasn't the case, I think, with Microsoft and some of the other PCs.
Larry, with regard to what you've been saying about the way younger people are looking at this material today, how do we get them to take a moment to evaluate? As you say, many of them who are not on the cusp don't take that time.
Well, it's really more about just asking questions. And sometimes it's about asking questions even when it's not necessarily in line with what you personally feel. You'll see things like Facebook is a really great example. I frequent Facebook, and I'll see lots of articles posted on online satire. And if I don't take the time to stop and go into it, I'm automatically like, what? But it's been instinctively programming me to stop, go through, read it. And if it doesn't feel right, go somewhere else and line it up. You know, go to some different media sources and get various opinions and whatnot. And we just have to really get our students to take the minute to say, okay, does this add up? Naturally, does it feel right? And if it doesn't feel right, which path do I take to discover what may be correct?
But if you do that, you are certainly the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. Because in today's society, you know, when you're doing everything in 140 characters,
right.
people don't have the time or make the time to do what you're suggesting they do.
Right. This is very true. But I feel like some approaches, even though they might, you guess you could call them old school, they are the most effective. But like you say, we're on the go, you know. One thing that I've tried to teach students that I work with about media literacy is even if I don't have the time to completely go through it, I might look at it, save it, and come back to it later before I repost it. Because you don't want to put something out there that you can't pull back. Once you put it out in the social media world, it's there. Mm-hmm. You can delete the post, but it's still there. So, you know, if you have interest in it, look at it, grab it, hold on to it. And when you get the chance, you know, take a look at it. And I think a lot of students, they do that. A lot of them tell me, I'm interested in something, so I was reading about it one night when I was bored. You know, perfect time to come back to something.
Mm-hmm. Art, a lot of the people who use this social media, and I mean use it in the full sense of the word, intentionally put out bogus information because they have an agenda.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a point that they want to make and they want to influence people. This Michael Brown video, that when I saw that, I couldn't believe it. I went to Snopes, which is an online service, which is a kind of a fact check operation here, and told me that it was bogus. But there are people out there who are abusing it in that way again and again and again.
Well, I talked to last week a former student who is working in social media for a shoe company. And I said, what exactly are you doing? Well, what they do essentially is they identify people who are trendsetters and who are on Facebook. They then send them – they send them money and they send them the free shoes. And so then they're wearing the material and they'll even comment on it. Aren't these great shoes? Well, the people that are happen to see it and are fans of these people don't know that they're being paid. And so, you know, you have to encourage a certain skepticism. The thing that I found is that the students love it. That's the good news. It's more fun to take active consideration of what's going on than to simply be passive. Nobody likes to be a schnook. Nobody likes to be played. And so when you talk to the students at a certain point, I refer to my students as media literati. You know, these are people that are in on the joke, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's not a funny joke. But when they're in on it, well, then they will take the time because it builds. And so if they can see themselves as being part of an exclusive group that are literate, that understand what's going on, it feeds into good habits.
The people with the shoes are trying to create a tipping point. They're trying to just have an avalanche, a landslide, if you will.
Yeah, it's this viral kind of thing. But and again, what's the function? We talk about strategies for making sense. Ask yourself, what is the function? What's the purpose behind the media presentation? And often there's a latent function, which is, in this case, profit.
Whom are we to believe anymore? I look to what's going on in the news today with Brian Williams and Bill O'Reilly, and there are others that fall into this. You know, these are people who have their own constituencies and who are admired and respected and thought to be people who tell the truth. And now we're finding out that they're not telling the truth. It makes me wonder who we should be believing. What do you think, Larry?
I mean, let's use Twitter as an example. When the Ferguson incident took place, a lot of people didn't feel comfort in what they were getting from local media outlets. So a lot of people turned to Twitter to get firsthand information from people that were out there on the front lines. And for those that I follow that were involved, they were fairly honest about what was going on. It was very truthful. But for some, they looked at Twitter as, I guess, a guerrilla form of media, and it, you know, how can you fact check this and whatnot? But it's a double-edged sword. When we have Brian Williams not telling us the truth, then we look for places to get our information from. And it creates this cycle of who do you believe, you know, and then it goes back to the person. Are they able to sift through what's real and what's not, you know?
What I think, Art?
Well, it's important to make the point, I guess, that when you are checking on what people are saying, it's a form of respect. You know, we're taking them seriously enough that we really do want to look carefully at what they're saying. So it's not necessarily an attack on them or undermining them. And we need to make it clear that when we do this, it really is a form of respect. We want to take them seriously, take what they have to say seriously, and so make sure that that what's being represented is accurate, et cetera. And,
but there's really not an easy way to do that. Let's take Twitter for just a moment.
Sure.
It's become a very, very useful tool, particularly in the world of journalism, not only communications among people, but journalists are making great use of it. But this is unfiltered information,
right.
And a lot of it seems to me, is accepted as gospel without that filter, without an editor, without verification. And this can be dangerous because it can go to so many people so quickly.
Well, yes. And there are some strategies that you can employ immediately. For example, word choice. You can look at the choice of words and then work backwards to understand point of view. For example, in Israel's building these. I'm getting in trouble here. Israel's building these various buildings and throughout Palestine, and which we refer to as settlements. In Israel, they're referred to as neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you see a tweet and they're referring to neighborhoods, you can work backwards and get a sense as to point of view. Is somebody a martyr or are they a terrorist? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Was Michael Brown? If he was guilty at all, but was he involved in shoplifting or robbery?
Mm-hmm.
Because both of those words were used the same day by different newspapers
like,
in their headlines.
Like, I saw this constantly, looters and protesters. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm like, it's where you stand on it that you use certain words to describe what was going on.
Yeah.
Do you find this, I would call it, for lack of a better word, a coding.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find, Larry, that this is fairly common?
It's very common, and there's codes used all the time. And depending on where you stand, it's either offensive or it fits your agenda, you know. For me, personally, I know a lot of the folks out there were protesting. But for those that didn't agree with it, they were looting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I looked at it, I'm like, well, I don't think that's an accurate description of what's going on. But for somebody who wasn't in line with it, it seemed like they were causing problems or was trouble.
So it would seem to me that this the effectiveness is based on the number of acolytes you have out there, that you're just reinforcing what they believe and what they feel. And the other 50%, let's say it's split 50-50, just kind of disregard it. Still, if you've got 50% of anything, you've got a lot.
Yeah.
And that shows its effectiveness.
Oh, it's terribly effective. And you find really that on the internet, there's not that much original material that comes out. A great deal of it is simply restated, is passed along. And so you're getting these attitudes reinforced. And really what you find is that, it's cognitive dissonance. You know, you select things that that reinforce what you believe when you walk in the door.
Yeah. I'm going to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about internet media literacy. My guests in studio are Larry Morris, a media communications graduate student at Webster University, and Art Silverblatt at Webster University, who is also vice president of Gateway Media Literacy Partners of St. Louis. We'll be back to continue our conversation and bring in another voice in just a moment. If you'd like to get in, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you'd prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation about internet media literacy in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri Auditor Tom Schweik is at a hospital after experiencing what his staff is describing as a, quote, medical situation. The auditor's spokesman, Spence Jackson, says Schweik, quote, experienced a medical situation at his home in Clayton this morning and is being treated at a St. Louis area hospital. Jackson declined to release any other details about Schweik's ailment or condition. U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri will be among a bipartisan group of 10 senators that is reintroducing the Campus Accountability and Safety Act today. The bill aims to require colleges receiving federal funding to have an independent advocate responsible for sexual assault prevention and response on campus. It also works to better empower students and would protect the rights of the accused. And the Missouri Highway Patrol is in the process of advertising for more trooper applicants. The agency is attempting to attract more minority candidates, but some observers say it's not doing enough. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about Internet media literacy. In studio with me, Larry Morris, a graduate student at Webster University, and Art Silverblatt. He teaches there, and he's also a vice president with Gateway Media Literacy Partners of St. Louis. Gentlemen, I'm going to bring in another voice into our conversation. Joining us now by phone is Eugene Kiley of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan site that monitors what politicians say and advertise. Eugene Kiley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of traffic do you have at FactCheck.org with regard to Internet issues?
Well, we get we have a whole page devoted to the kinds of viral emails that speed around the Internet that are false. These are where we find some of the most outrageous and worst claims and most hateful claims that are made in politics.
Give me an example or two, if you would, of the kinds of things that you're evaluating.
Well, a lot of it deals, maybe we deal with politics. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot that deals with President Obama being a Muslim when, in fact, he's a Christian. And there's just a whole genre, really, of emails out there that deal with this. It all stem from this claim that he's Muslim, and it's just one after another. It's just rather outrageous, and a lot of the claims that are made, we find that when we look into it, the truth is some of the programs that are identified as something that Obama started for Muslim countries turn out to, in fact, have been started in prior administrations, including the Bush administration.
What do you make of the use of the Internet and the things you've described in today's society, the impact it has?
Well, it has a very corrosive impact, I'm sure. I'm not a political scientist, so I don't study these matters. But just judging by the kind of responses we get from readers, we have something that we call Ask Fact Check, which is where we answer questions from readers. So we get hundreds of readers who email us questions every day. And the kind of things that I would readily dismiss out of hand, people are giving some credibility to by sending them to us and asking us, is this true? And on its face, it seems untrue. And once you do some reporting around it, you find out where it came from and why it's untrue. You know, we write it up and send it out. So the mere fact that people are sending these things around and asking if it's true is disturbing.
I guess one question we'd have to ask is who fact checks the fact checkers?
Well, we fact check ourselves for sure. Before we post anything up online, we provide two things that we do for transparency's sake. One is we provide links to all of our source material, so people themselves online can click on the links and see what report we're referring to and what, you know, where that quote comes from or where the data comes from. And secondly, before we even post anything online, we have someone who's not involved in the research and writing part of the article go through line by line, word by word, and doing a fact-checking of our article before we post it. So it's kind of the, you know, what they do at magazines and what they don't do in newspapers. And I've worked for the newspapers, and it's they don't do that there. And this is something that helps us because it catches any errors that we put out there and increases our credibility.
In your experience, and given the kind of traffic you have, are you finding or do you believe that there is more bending of the truth or outright lying these days than has been the case even in the recent past? I'm thinking of Brian Williams, Bill O'Reilly, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs comes out and he embellishes his resume. Seems to be an awful lot of this sort of thing going on these days.
Yeah, I don't know that I could say it's any more or less. I mean, it's certainly it's a lot easier for people to catch people in lies. There's more information that is available also on the internet. For example, with Brian Williams, so it didn't take that long for people to track it down once the complaints were made about him, that some veterans had said, well, he was embellishing the truth. There's the report itself that he gave initially back in, when was it, 2003 or so?
Yes.
That is still up there, available on the internet. That's not something that would be the case, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when the internet was more in its infancy. The fact that this material is still out there, nothing leaves the internet. It stays up there, and we're able to see what his original report was, and it was different than the report he was giving us now.
Let me get our studio guests into this into this conversation as well. Art Silverblatt, I guess that what Mr. Kiley has just suggested here is really the upside of what's going on in terms of how quickly things can be checked and verified. That's a real positive.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, it's a complicated world. You know, there's a difference between fact and truth. Sometimes what you find is that a fact may be accurate, but it's only telling a piece of the story. So as you're measuring this, it's far more complex and requires more time than sometimes the organizations have to explain or the audience has in terms of wanting an explanation, unfortunately.
And Larry Morris?
Absolutely. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No.
That's absolutely true, I was going to say, and that's something that we write about frequently, is that, you know, something may be false, and that's fine, but more often we find that it is true but taken out of context, or true but not the whole story. Once you start putting some context around these facts, then they're better understood.
Go ahead, Larry.
No, I agree. I was watching a documentary not too long ago on when Kennedy was assassinated and how the ticker tapes were coming in about it, and nobody was completely sure. You know, and how they – because I look at Twitter as today's ticker tape.
And they're still not, by the way.
Yeah, right.
But just the checks and balances that went into before we released that, you know, let's be sure. And with social media, you can throw it out there really quickly, and like they're saying, but you can easily go and go right behind it and check it on the spot quickly, you know, to see if it holds that weight, you know.
Eugene and Kiley, I have to suspect that politicians are probably as good at this sort of thing as anybody else out there. And you deal with politicians and politics all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have a bag of tricks, frankly, that they use. We on our website, we have a sister organization called FlackCheck.org, which on its website has something that they call Patterns of Deception, which is really an educational tool for anybody who's interested in politics and public policy to see the different methods and ways that politicians use, the tactics they use to deceive us.
Well, yeah. How do we correct that? I guess if you knew the answer to that, you'd be a wealthy man, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you an answer.
Well, one of the ways they could do it is coming to sites like ours. Another way is to be open-minded about what they're hearing. You know, one of the things that, there's a terrific book that was written by the founder of Fact Check, Brooks Jackson, called Unspun. And it has a chapter on how people have, you know, they have their own biases, and we're wired that way. That's the way the brain is wired, that you're more likely, if you're biased one way or the other, to give the other candidate, the opposing candidate, a pass. I mean, to be critical of the opposing candidate and give your own candidate a pass, when, in fact, what you should be doing is being skeptical and think critically of statements made by both parties and both candidates, and not to have this inherent bias where you're immediately supporting something that is a statement made by your candidate or your party and be critical of the other party and the other candidate. Being open-minded is goes a long way to try to deal with this problem.
This is critical. I agree. It's critical thinking. You know.
Yeah. I was just going to say this is right down media right in media literacy's wheelhouse. Right. The critical thinking component.
And that's what you know. It gets back to education. And you know, UNESCO has declared that media literacy is a fundamental human right. Internationally, it's just booming. It's a mystery to me why it hasn't been more of a requirement at the secondary level in the United States. It's very uneven. Let's put it that way. And it's essential that people have the skills to understand their world, which is being brought to us by the media.
And how do we learn those skills?
Well, there are concrete ways. There are strategies that are employed you know, the website is just an example of it. There are a lot of ways that you can approach looking at function, looking at the worldview, understanding, looking at the introductions, word choice. Lots of things can be done in a concrete fashion, but people need to do that. It's important for us to say, too, that we're not teaching people, we're not telling them what to think. We're telling them how to think.
We'll have a link to that website, by the way, on ours. But another part of it is get at them young.
Yes.
Teach them these skills
yes.
young. I'd like to get some of our listeners into the conversation. Eugene, Kylie, can you stay with us for a couple of moments? And if a question comes your way? Great.
Sure.
Okay. Appreciate that. Let's start with Jay calling from Normandy. Jay, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I just thought I'd say Mike Screen or Buffett or for all this stuff that might or might not be true, is just follow the news out of the good old-fashioned newspaper. They have editors. I think they do a pretty good job with screening this untruth. For example, the New York Times had a deal about the climatologist or the climate scientist that was a bogus guy and putting out things because he was paid by big oil and big coal. And they did a nice job on it. Just read it. It was in the Sunday paper. The Post does similar things. So I'd like your comments on that.
Eugene, Kylie, let's go to you first.
Well, as someone who's spent a career in newspapers, I absolutely agree with them. Mm-hmm.
The question is, how long are the newspapers, as we've come to know them, going to be around and the form that we have appreciated?
Well, maybe not in the form but that we're used to, but they're still doing very good work, and it's still out there available, whether it's on the Internet or if it's in a newspaper form. The caller's absolutely right. I mean, you know, you find these trusted sources of information, and, you know, you can learn a lot through that. And I would hope that you know, in addition to newspapers, that they're also looking at sites like factcheck.org, PolitiFact, and the Washington Post Fact Checker. Those are the three major fact-checking organizations in the United States.
All right. Art, why don't you respond as well?
Well, you know, it's important, I guess, to clarify what we mean by critical thinking. You know, in general parlance, to be critical means to be negative. And nobody likes that, you know. So you would think in some ways that media literacy might be threatening to media organizations. But, you know, in academe, critical means discerning. And so what we're talking about is that sometimes you can apply these skills to understand how well the media is covering things. You know, they a lot of these people, they're working under enormous constraints in terms of time and economic constraints. And it's amazing how good much of the coverage is. So we need to understand that media literacy is not media bashing. It really is in many ways appreciating what works well as picking up what may be deficient.
We have an email from Jessica Brown, whom we all know with Gateway Media Literacy Partners, and she's basically saying there's a real responsibility on the part of the media producers, and we are all media producers now.
Absolutely.
And our responsibility is to make sure that the information that we disseminate is accurate and truthful. Back to the phones now. Let's bring in Dennis from University City. Go ahead, Dennis.
Actually, from the city. Don, Dennis Lubeck speaking.
Go ahead.
And I know Art as well.
Hi, Dennis.
I just have a quick question, and this is at the risk of sounding outdated and old, really. And my question is really, what's the balance between new ways of getting information through social media and old ways, you know, through serious newspapers, magazines, even books? And a sub question, you know, it's already been mentioned by some of the callers that, my goodness, how do we have any context to become critical thinkers unless we have some context for history and politics? And finally, you could put it in the Ferguson context, and your station has had so many incredibly informative programs led by you. You know, how many people pay any attention or even talk about, you know, the history of race in St. Louis? In other words, how did North County become so segregated? Mm-hmm. It's almost like these larger contextual questions are left out of the conversation. I'm not blaming all of this on social media, but I think it's a piece of the problem. So what's the balance?
Thanks, Dennis. Let me turn to Larry as the younger representative of this group here, because you're really straddling the line on this.
Yeah, and for me, like I said, social media came of age as I grew. But the biggest thing is just never trying to teach this newer generation. You may feel strongly about something, but don't put all your eggs in that basket. If it sparks your interest, read the paper, read magazines, pick up a book on it. And through the critical thinking and doing this, you will start to form an opinion that will have some foundation in truth, as opposed to just getting one source. Sometimes you get lucky, you read a source, it's pretty good, you fact check it, and you're like, wow, that's fairly accurate. But I find these days, there's always a little bit of something that's off, you know. So just making it okay. It's okay to pick up the Sunday paper and read the Sunday paper on the same article you just read online. You might get a bit from that paper that you didn't get from social media.
Of course, people now are reading the Sunday paper on their telephones.
That's, yeah.
that is a big difference.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, we advocate a balanced media diet, really. Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting is that different media present different forms of news. I'll come home at night and my wife is watching local news, and something is leading that evening's broadcast, and I think, well, I want to read about that the next morning. Not only is it not on the front page, it's not even in the paper, because what is on television tends to the kind of news that is suitable there is events-driven and visual, that kind of thing. If you want to see what happened in Ferguson, go online, you know, you can see these things, you can, you know, watch it on television. If you want to understand the context, why did this happen, read about it. And when you put that together, you'll have a broader, a more comprehensive view of what happened.
Do you want to weigh in on that, Eugene Kiley?
Well, I absolutely agree that the more sources of information that you reach out to, the more informed you're going to be, because there is going to be, especially with different media outlets and different platforms, they're limited by their platform. So if it's a newspaper, you have so many column inches. If it's a social media, you have so many characters. If it's a book, you have hundreds of pages. So yes, absolutely, the more sources of information you have, the better for you to be able to piece together for yourself what the facts are.
Of course, in this day of the 24-hour news cycle, too, a lot of this stuff, as Art has indicated here, is here today and literally gone tomorrow. And that's mm-hmm. part of the problem. People have short memories. Let's take one more phone call before we have to say goodbye. And we'll bring in Joe calling from Cedar Hill. Joe, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I believe that one of the premises of our founding fathers is that in order for a democracy to flourish and thrive, it had to have a free and unfettered press. Now, with that in mind, it's a general belief today that your basic video news sources, 2, 4, and 5 in the St. Louis area, have become more owned and controlled by corporate America, and that the free and unfettered part has been diluted or controlled. So to what extent do your panelists believe that that's true, and how much damage has it caused our democracy? And then as an observation about politicians and misleading people, it seems that Martha Stewart went to prison not because of tax evasion, but because she lied during the investigation. It seems that politicians should be held to a similar standard.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Art, I'll turn to you first with regard to the corporate ownership of media outlets.
Absolutely. I mean, the ownership is critical in terms of content. And you'll find in many, many cases that it's interesting when you look at, like, evening talk shows, that often many of the guests are maybe promoting a movie that was made by a studio that was owned – that is owned by the television, you know, the same company, same folks. And so, you know, these are not coincidences as they go through. So you have to understand and appreciate that the ownership makes a difference. We do, however, in this internet world, again, you've got, as you mentioned, Don, you have – producers who are just folks that happen to be citizen journalists. And you have to understand what their point of view is, where they're coming from. But at the same time, they're not necessarily bound by corporate interests.
And Eugene Kiley, do you have anything you'd like to add to that before we say goodbye?
Well, yeah. I mean, I disagree with the premise of the question, really, because I think now we have more sources of information that they're not from the corporate world. It used to be that 2, 4, and 7 were the only stations that you had, and the New York Times and the Washington Post and major newspapers are the only sources of newspapers we have. But now we have WikiLeaks, and we have so many ProPublica, all these websites and organizations that are out there that are operating separate and apart from that corporate controlled media world that we used to live in.
Right. And Larry, I'm going to give you the final word.
No, I agree with both of them. When you throw advertisers and corporate money into the pot, you by default are going to have some leniency towards certain things and whatnot. But as they said, you know, there's ways to go around that and fact check the people that are supposed to be fact checking. So
all right. We'll leave it at that. Much to talk about. And just remind our listeners that they'll find links to factcheck.org and Gateway Media Literacy Partners on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Art Silverblatt and Larry Morris, thank you so much for being with us. And Eugene Kiley, thank you for spending some time with us and discussing this subject today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up, the Ice Bucket Challenge Fallout. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.